So this week's Parsha, Parsha's Chukas, it's on the Jews' encounter with Edom. So in this week's Parsha, there's a lot of different topics. It's filled with different ideas and different interesting stories. And one of them is when the Jews approach Edom, the descendants of Esav, there's an interesting exchange that Moshe sets off. So I want to try to understand that exchange, I guess, in a deeper manner. So let's look at the first source number one. It says, Vayishlach Moshe Melachim Mikadesh El Melech Edom. Ko Amar Achicha Yisrael Atal Yodata Eiz Kol Atzla'a Asher Mitzah Asnu. So the first encounter with Edom, or at least the first instance, before the Jewish people enter into Esav's land, Moshe sends out messengers in order to let Melech Edom know that they're planning on going through. And he says, Ko Amar Achicha Yisrael, this is what your brethren Yisrael said. You know that we've gone through a lot of hardships in our existence. So the interesting point in this is that Moshe is bringing up the fact that the Jews have gone through a lot of hardships. Why is that relevant? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi goes on the idea of Achicha Yisrael. He explains, Mara Allah Haskir Lo Kan Achva. So why does Moshe mentioned to the Malachim that they should talk about the brotherhood of Yisrael and Esav, of Yaakov and Esav. El amarlo at achim anachnu bnei Avraham. So say to them, or say to him, Melech Edom, that we're all the brothers and the sons of Avraham. Shneamarlar ki ger yezaracha val shneinu haya oso achov lefroa. That really, we're all the descendants of Avraham, and really we should have all had to take on the promise that the ger, the future generations of Avraham, would ultimately be enslaved. But yet, only one of us did, only Klal Yisrael. So really, Esav should have taken on that burden and had to repay that debt, but only the Jews did. Atayah data is klat law. Go back to Rashi. It says, Lefichach pirish avichem el avinu. And in fact, your father, Esav, the reason why he left Yaakov is because he knew this. Vayelech al eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv, mipnei ashtar chov hamutal lehem vihitilu lo al Yaakov. Because Esav knew that there was this promise, there was this hashgacha that the descendants of Avraham would be in Mitzrayim and they would be enslaved. So Esav, he escaped and he went away and he left Yaakov so that Yaakov would have to take on this burden of being enslaved. So it's an interesting argument. And let's just go through the psukim themselves as to what happened over there. So it says in source number 3, Breishis Lamed Vav, Lamed Vav, sorry, Vav, Pasuk Vav, Vayikach Esav es Nashav es Banav es Pnosav ves Kol Nafsho Speso ves Mekneu ves Kol Behemto ves Kol Kinyano Asher Rachash Beretz Kanan Vayelech El Eretz Mekneu Yaakov Achiv. So Esav took all of his family and all of his stuff, and he separated because of, it says, Mekneu Yaakov Achiv. He went to his own land because of Mipnei Yaakov Achiv. So it's not clear why he left. It just says because of Yaakov. But here, so the Rashbam gives the pshat. The pshat is, Ki Yaakov kanas bechora, v'dino haya liyarish etz Yitzchak. Because Yaakov was konat. He bought the bechor in the famous story. And he really was the one who's going to be miyarish etz Yitzchak. He was going to inherit from Yitzchak. L'chach yashav bi'eretz migrei aviv. Therefore, Yaakov remained, and Esav realized that he wasn't Kona the Bechor, and he didn't have a right to this land, so he left, and he went to his own land. So the pshat is that Mipnei Yaakov Achiv is a recognition of the fact that Yaakov, in the eyes of Esav, was really the Bechor, and that he was deserving of the land, and therefore, he left the land. So the pshat is that Esav was accepting of the reality that Yaakov was the Bechor. But the Medrash Rabbah gives a little bit of a different approach. So if you look in source number 5, and we'll hopefully put everything together, that's the goal of this year, try to make everything clearer, hopefully. So if you look in source number 5, the Medrash brings down a little bit of a different approach as to why they separated from one another. So first it says, Vayikach Esav es Nashav, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lev Chacham liyamino, Velev Ksil lismolo. So the heart of a Chacham is to the right, and the heart of a ksil, of a fool, is to the left. Lev chacham liyamino. So when it says that the heart of a chacham is to the right, ze Yaakov. So this is a reference to Yaakov. Tichsiv, vayakom Yaakov, vayisa es banav. Ve'achar kach es nashav. Because when Yaakov got up, first he took his children, and then his wives. V'leiv k'sil l'smolo zeh Esav sh'nemar v'yikach Esav es nashav v'acharkach es banav. So the heart of the fool is to the left. That's seen from the fact that Esav took his wives first, or I guess protected his wives first, and then his children. So the question is, what's the difference? I mean, why is it that Yaakov is considered the chacham because he puts his children first, and Esav is considered the fool because he puts his wives first? So I think just one point, it's kind of a secondary ancillary point to the shir, that the Medrash is pointing out is that a chacham realizes that it's more important to protect the future than it is to protect the present. So the idea is that Yaakov, in bringing his children and protecting them, obviously putting them first is protection. He, not that he didn't love his wives, but, and it wasn't a basis of, it wasn't a love basis that he made this decision. It was a philosophical idea that he realized that the future and the children, which are the future, is really more important to preserve than the present, because the future is what allows the world to continue to exist. But Esav was different. He was driven by his emotions and his instincts and his drives, and therefore he put his wives first, because he really didn't value, or he didn't protect, he didn't see the value of protecting his children first, because he couldn't see it from a philosophical perspective. He only looked at it from a more emotional, I guess, instinctual perspective in his attraction to his wives and his love of his wives. So that's what it means, I think, Lev Chacham Liyamino and Lev Ksiel Lismolo, that Yaakov was a reflection of Chachma, that he overcame his natural emotions, perhaps, which might have been to put his wives first and to be chivalrous, and he realized that protection belongs to the future, and we really have to preserve the future generations, whereas Esav was more drawn to his immediate feelings and his immediate emotions, and perhaps his love and attachment to his wives was stronger than his children, and therefore he puts them first. So I think that's an interesting point, that even in a situation of danger, should we intrinsically go by our emotions, or do we have to consider the philosophical implications of our actions? And Yaakov was clearly considering that. But let's just keep going. It says, Vayelech el eretz b'nei Yaakov achiv, Rabbi Eliezer amar b'nei shtar chov. So here we have a machlokes. Rabbi Eliezer says, basically like Rashi was saying over here, that there was a shtar chov, there was a debt on the descendants of Avraham, that they had to encounter and endure the slavery of Egypt. And Esav accepted that, and he realized that, but he tried to get away from it, and he did. He was successful. And the other side is Kigir Yezaracha, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amar ben Abusha. He says that it was because Esav was embarrassed that he was no longer Miyarish as Yitzchak, and he gave up the Bechor, and it was a source of embarrassment, so he had to leave. And he left Yaakov, and he gave Yaakov the land because he was embarrassed. So the machlokes over here seems to be, so what's a machlokes between the two sides, the two ways of learning as to why Esav had separated from Yaakov? So perhaps, and I think we'll use this as we go through the share, but perhaps the question is, do we say that really Esav had accepted Lashkacha vis-a-vis him, and he realized that it was time for him to move on, to leave, because he recognized or he accepted the fact that Yaakov was the Bechor, and that because, and he accepted Hashgacha in general, he wasn't in denial of Hashgacha, so it's a sign of acceptance of the reality of his relationship to Yaakov, but his desire to avoid pain, to avoid a danger. But the other side holds Busha, that he was embarrassed, which sounds like he was still struggling with the reality that he messed up, and he was still ensconced, or he was still, I would guess he was still delving into his own embarrassment, his own situation, and how he gave up on the Bechor and how awful it was. So I think the Machlokas and the Medrash is, what was Esav's state of mind at this point when he separated from Yaakov? Excuse me. Was Esav recognizing the fact that the Hashgacha was no longer with him in terms of him being the Bechor, but now he had moved on, and now he was thinking about the future and how he wanted to avoid this future pain? Or was he still embarrassed? Was he still in conflict? Was he still affected by the fact that Yaakov had gotten the Bechor? So if we use that mentality, if we use that idea, so what is Rashi's explanation? So Rashi's explanation, in terms of the argument, makes more sense. Yeah, you have a question? You don't have to raise your hand, that's fine. You can just ask. Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I figured that was the best. What's the
I think, yeah, I think this is on the way back. I think this is on the way back when they separated from each other. Yeah. No, it was on the... yeah, I think it was on the way back, I think. Yeah, if I recall.
When Yaakov was on his way, when they met, and then after they met.
Okay. Okay. No problem. So just back to our Rashi. So Rashi is taking one approach of the Medrash, which is the approach, the first approach in the Machlokes, which is why did Esav leave? Because he didn't want to take on the pain and endure the pain of slavery in Mitzrayim. But I think the premise of that approach is that there was a certain acceptance on the part of Esav, as opposed to the other side of Busha, where he was still struggling with his decision-making, and he hadn't really resolved the conflict. So it seems like from Rashi, because Rashi says, go back to source number two, the argument that Moshe is telling the Malachim, the messengers, to make to Melech Edom is that really we endured the slavery, and it really should have been on both of us, and it should not have been just on us, but we endured it. So it sounds like the approach that Moshe is taking, or the assumption is, like the first Shita, that really that Esav at this point had already moved past the fact that Yaakov had achieved the Bechor, and now it's just now he's just reminding him, or he's just showing him that, or he's using a certain approach that there's a certain Hakar Satov that should be made to Klal Yisrael and to Yaakov for taking on this burden and for Esav avoiding it. But it seems like the premise of the argument is somewhat that Esav and Esav's descendants had already accepted and moved forward with the reality that Yaakov was the Bechor and Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, were deserving of Eretz Yisrael, and now it was just time to move forward. And Moshe is taking that approach. His approach is that really you've already accepted the fact that we're the Bechor, and we took on something, and there's a certain repayment that should be made to us for taking on your burden, but you accept the fact that it really was your burden and that you escaped it. So it sounds like the premise of Moshe in approaching Edom is that the society of Edom and Melech Edom had moved beyond the struggle and moved beyond the conflict with Yaakov, and they had achieved an easier life, and we haven't. So therefore, there should be a recognition on the part of Edom of justice that they really deserve to repay us for taking on this burden. So Moshe is approaching Edom in that way. So let's keep going and see if that's consistent, and we'll see how it turns out. So the Ramban over there in source number 7, by the way, just to prove in source number 6, I should have read it, but it says, Vayomer la'avram yadua teidaki ger yezarecha be'aretz lo'lohem v'avadum inuosom arba me'oshana. So that's what it's referring to. It's referring to the fact that the Jews ultimately would be enslaved by the Mitzrayim. And that was what Esav was trying to avoid, because really it was mutal on both of them, but only Yaakov endured it. But it sounds like from the argument of Moshe is that really they recognize this, that really Edom recognized the fact that they escaped a harsh reality, a harsh future. But it's also premised on the fact that they're accepting of the relationship and of who's the Bechor and who's not. So just a side point, again, I just wanted to, interesting Ramban, not so much defined, but it's interesting. He says, El Melech Edom. So the Pasuk says that Moshe sent messengers to Melech Edom. So Lo Hiskir Akasav Shemo, Ki Ein Tzorech. So it's interesting that the Pesukim don't mention what his name was. He's just this anonymous Melech Edom. Because there's no reason to. Aval Hiskir Sichon V'og Malchei Al-Mori B'Shmosam B'Avor Ki Hayu Yeduim B'Gvura. So the reason why Og and Melech Amori, Og and Sichon, who are Malchei Amori, why are their names mentioned? Because they were known to be courageous warriors. V'lahem, Shem B'Goyim, L'Hodos L'Fnei Yisbarach, Ki Asa Imanu L'Hafli. They had this reputation of being tremendous warriors, and it brings about the idea that the miracle that we destroy them is much greater when you know the how wondrous and how amazing of warriors they were. K'moshin Amor, So hopefully we say this. We know we say this at the Seder. So the Torah will mention the great kings in which we were Yorishtam. So it says this in Yoshua when you have these great kings, Adoni Tzedek Melech Shulaim, V'hoam Melech Hevron, U'Faram Melech Yeramos, U'Yafia Melech Lochish, U'Devir Melech Eglon. V'yovav melech Medon, v'yovin melech Hatzor. So the Torah only mentions the names of important people, of those who are courageous, because it's trying to demonstrate the greatness of God in destroying them. But when a king doesn't have such a great reputation, they're not considered an amazing warrior. It's not as important. Ushar melechim has hiskira b'mispar lo b'shemos. The other melechim are mentioned in number, but not in name. V'amar akasov v'yomrei lov Adam kinismuchu kol amo im adonehem b'miyun hazeh. So this, what's interesting in this Ramban, I just wanted to make one point on this Ramban. It's also like a little bit of a break, but the Ramban is saying something interesting as well, I think, which is that he's pointing out once again this concept that the Torah is not really a historical, it's not really there to provide us with a history of what happened. That's really not as important as the philosophy of the Torah. The philosophy is really the essence, which is to glorify God and to show God's wisdom and God's greatness. So in the face of a situation where it's really not necessary. See, if you're a historian, you would say, oh, the Torah is not being accurate. It's not really functioning as it should. But that's because, or that would be premised on the wrong assumption of what the Torah is about. The Torah isn't about history and giving a completely precise history. It's more about philosophy and glorifying God. So in order to demonstrate that, the Ramban's saying that a king that has no relevance to that purpose and that function of glorifying God is really not, you don't have to mention them by name. So I think that's an interesting Ramban, something to keep in your back pocket for discussions at any cocktail party you go to or any dinner party. You can mention, oh, there's this great Ramban where he talks about how the Torah is not a history book, it's more a philosophy book. But back to the Torah. So if we look in source number 8, so what keeps going on? So Moshe keeps going on in a similar vein in trying to convince Edom that they should be allowed to pass through in order to get to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, Vayerdu avosinu mitzrayim, v'neishav mitzrayim yamim rabim, v'yareu lanu mitzrayim v'la avosinu. So we were hurt in Mitzrayim, and we were living there for many, many years, and we went down to Vayerdu avosinu mitzrayim. Our forefathers went down to Mitzrayim, and we lived there for many years. And they caused us harm, Vayareilanu Mitzrayim Lavosinu, and to our forefathers. So Rashi says over there, Vayareilanu Savalnu Tsaros Rabos, we endured tremendous hardships. So he's kind of repeating himself, but it's the same concept. Lavosinu Mikan Sha'avos Mitzdarin Bekever Kishaparanios Bal Yisrael. So Rashi says from here we learn that the Avos, the forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and furthermore, they're mitzdayer, they're in pain in their graves when bad things happen to Klal Yisrael. So when the Jews were in Mitzrayim, they were mitzdayer in their graves. So what does that mean? And why, according to Rashi, is that whatever this concept is, why is he mentioning it? Why does Moshe instruct the messenger to mention this concept? And how does it fit into the general approach that we're taking, hopefully? So the Gur Aryeh, he brings down some more insight. He's a parish on Rashi, the Maharal. And he says, Savanu Tsaros Rabos, Ratalomar, Shemasha Kasu Vayareu. So what does it mean, Vayareu? Afa Gav Shalashon Zem Mashma Raksha Asulahem Ra. Vayareu only sounds like they did a bad thing to them. Vamakomakar Ksiv, Vayareu Lana Hamitrim by Anunu, Vayitnu Alino Avadaka Shah. And in another place, in Devarim, it says that the Mitrium did harm to the Jews and they caused them suffering and they gave them a lot of hard work. That's why he explains that Vayareu means that they endured many hardships. Vayareu sounds like it's inclusive of many different bad things. So the Jews went through a lot of bad things. So why does he say Savanu, that we tolerated, we endured a lot of hardships? Velo asu lanu tzaros rabos, not that they did many hard things to us, hardships. It's not that bad things happened and then it passed. Why would the Jews have to daven to Hashem if it passed, if it was transient? We were in a constant state of hardship. And that's why we daven to Hashem. So he's just saying that really the Jews, it wasn't transient. So the argument is that when we were in Mitzrayim, it wasn't a passing hardship, but it was really the whole time we were there. Sha'avos mitzdarim, de'in lefarash v'la'avosenu sha'yu b'mitzrayim. So it's not referring to our forefathers in Mitzrayim. De'im kein habi lemechta v'ayreu hamitzrayim la'avosenu v'lanu. It should have said, that the Mitzrayim had caused harm to our forefathers and us. Kemosha anu omrem bahagada lavasinu v'lanu kol nisim ha'ilu ki avasinu ha'yukodim in Mitzrayim. But rather, the avasinu is, I think it's a reference to those who lived before Mitzrayim, like the avos. Elamitoch shitzir osam ki ilan etzaru avos bekever. So because they're in pain, the Jews, it's as if the avos are nitzta'er, they're in pain in their graves. So what does that mean? What does it mean that the avos are nitzta'er in their graves? And also, why is, according to Rashi's interpretation and the Gur Aryeh, why is this being mentioned by Moshe? So I think the next step in the progression here is that first, Moshe's assumption is that Yaakov has already accepted their role, has accepted their role, Edom, vis-a-vis Yaakov, and they simply avoided the hardship. And now what Moshe is saying is that they should recognize that they avoided it, accept it, give a karzuk tov for the Jewish people for enduring it. But now he's mentioning one other point, that our forefathers were mitzvah in their graves. So our forefathers are the same forefathers as Esav. So being that they accept the fact that we're brethren and we have, you know, the same background and the same forefathers, what does it mean that our avos are mitzvah bekever? So I think it means not that they're actually moving and they're in pain, physical pain, but it means that when the Jews are in suffering, it's a reflection of their legacy, because part of the Jewish success is the legacy of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. When the Jews are in pain and they're suffering, it takes away from the legacy and the Havtacha to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the idea that Moshe, I think, is saying now to Esav is that, yes, if you accept it, you should also realize that it has an effect on your forefathers, not just our forefathers, but your forefathers, because we share in common the same forefathers. So Moshe keeps progressing with the same types of arguments. The first argument is that really you recognize that, you know, you recognize and accept the fact that Yaakov is the Bechor and you're not. And now you can also accept that you avoided the situation and there should be a Karsa Tov. But not only that, but there was also wrong that was done to the legacy of our forefathers that is something that should be considered in attempting to rectify that somewhat by letting us go into Eretz Yisrael. So he's continuing on with the premise that Esav is accepting our brotherhood and accepting his role in the relationship with Klal Yisrael, that Edom accepts their role in their relationship with Klal Yisrael. And that's the premise of Moshe going into this. And then let's keep going. We're going to keep going. Vayitzak al Hashem, vayishma kolinu, vayishlach malach, vayotinu mimitzrayim, hinei anachnu bekadesh, yerketzei gvulecha. And then he continues and he says that we davened to Hashem and he sent the malach to take us out of Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu. And now we're in Kadesh on the border of your city, of your area, of your boundaries. Vayishma kolinu, look at Rashi, he says, Bivracha shebirachnu avinu akol kol Yaakov shanu tzoakim v'nenin. So once again, Rashi is saying that what is Moshe's argument? That really we davened, and davening and being answered by Klal Yisrael was one of the brachos that were given to Yaakov. And it says, kol kol Yaakov shanu tzoakim v'nenin. That's one of the brachos to Klal Yisrael, that when we daven, we get answered. Malach mikan shenavim kruyin malachim v'omer vayu malivim malach elokim. So that's referring to Moshe, that a navi sometimes is called a malach because they're a messenger of God. But what's also interesting, fascinating, is that we keep going on in this progression. So now we see even more so that Moshe is accepting or has gone in with the premise that Edom accepts the relationship because he's mentioning Hakol Kol Yaakov. He's mentioning the reality that one of our brachos is that we get nanin and that we're accepted, our tefillah is accepted and answered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if Moshe didn't assume that Esav had accepted that, he would deny that. Why would Esav realize or recognize the validity of the argument that the Jewish people, when they daven, they're answered? The only reason would be is if Edom accepted the bracha of Yaakov, if they accepted it as being true and they were no longer in conflict about it. So again, Moshe is highlighting the fact that the Hashgacha is with them. And if Edom had accepted that relationship, which we'll see they didn't, if Edom had accepted that relationship with Yaakov, so then they would be thrilled with the fact that the Hashgacha had answered and the bracha is coming true, and now they could be a participant in helping the Jewish people achieve this bracha ultimately and go into Eretz Yisrael. And then finally, if you look in 13, Moshe makes a more practical argument. He says, Nabra na be'artzecha, lo na'avor b'sadeu v'cherem, v'lo nishtem e'be'er, Derech HaMelech Nelech Lo Niteya Min Esmol Ad Asher Navor Gvulecha. So aside from the fact that we're brethren, and you now accept the role that we that you have vis-a-vis us, and you recognize that the Hashgacha was with us because you're accepting the Birchas Yaakov, which is what Rashi's pointing out, by Yishma Kolenu. There's also practical benefit to you, and this is more practical. So he says, Nabro Beretzecha, Rashi says, Ein lecha le'orer al ar ha-yerusha shel Eretz Yisrael, kishim shelo parata es ha-chov, ase lanu azara me'atz, ezer me'atz, lavor derech artzecha. So Rashi says this openly. He says, you shouldn't argue about your rights to Eretz Yisrael because you didn't argue and you didn't have a desire to take on the chov, the debt. So let us go through and help us a little bit. So once again, this is clearly going on along the lines that Moshe's assumption is that Edom has moved forward and that they're accepting of the decisions that Esav had made and they accept the rule of Yaakov. And now he's simply asking them to repay them and to help them. And furthermore, even though we have food, we have drink, we're not going to drink from it or eat. We'll buy food from you. So, and there's a general principle that if you're at an inn, you should try to buy food from the inn maker. It's like when you go to a stadium and they make you buy food from the stadium or the movie theater. So here, it's really a chesed that you're buying from them and you're not bringing in your own stuff because you want to benefit them. But this argument now is in line, again, with a reality that not only should you accept, or you do you accept, or if you accept the relationship, you want to help us, but we'll benefit you. And we're not in it to harm you at all. So, Derech HaMelech Nelech, Anu, so he says that we're not going to have our animals eat from your fields. And this is going to be the hardest thing, but we'll restrain ourselves and we won't conquer anything and we'll just go on our way. Okay, so up till now, I think we're consistent. That Moshe's assumption, I keep repeating myself, but it's the main point. So Moshe's assumption is that really Edom has a certain approach to Klal Yisrael. That their approach is that we recognize, you know, Esau, we recognize that Yaakov's a Bechor, and we accept the fact that Yaakov's a Bechor, and we accept the decisions that Esau had made, and we recognize that now it's time to move forward and to benefit Klal Yisrael, and Moshe's assumption is based on that reality. But the question is, so what is Edom's response? So it says, Vayomer Elav Edom lo sa'avor bi pen b'cherev etzei likrasecha. So Edom says back, you're not allowed to go through my land, because if you do, I'm going to come out with my sword. So if you look at Rashi over there, it says, pen b'cherev etzei likrasecha, atem mizga'im v'kol shor rishchem avichem, v'omer manitzak v'yishma kolinu. So you're so happy, you're so proud of the fact that you have this ability to summon the help of God by davening. I'm going to come with what my father had given me, with the bracha that my father had given me, Yitzchak, which is that you'll live by the sword. So what do we see from Edom's response? So Edom's response shows us that Moshe's approach was misinformed, I would say. Because really, you see from here, you see from Rashi, and you see from the pasuk itself, that Edom really hadn't moved past the conflict. Yes, it's true that they accepted that Yaakov's bracha was real, but they didn't accept their role vis-a-vis Yaakov. They still assumed, and they still were in conflict, and they still assumed superiority. So we see that really the misinformation, or I guess it's not a flaw or anything, it was just Moshe's approach. Moshe was approaching it from the framework that Edom had accepted their relationship with Klal Yisrael, and now they were willing to work together, and Edom would help Klal Yisrael. But Edom's response is otherwise. Edom's response shows you that really, no, they didn't really accept. They accepted the bracha of Klal Yisrael. So in that sense, the Medrash is correct, that Esav had accepted it. But they still didn't accept their role vis-a-vis Klal Yisrael. And that's why he says, V'alchar b'cha sichya. He's saying, my bracha takes precedence over your bracha. Yeah, you have one bracha, but my bracha is better. So I accept that your bracha is real. I accept the fact that Yitzchak was morish to you. But mine is greater. I'm greater than you. So there's a truth, there's a partial truth that they were accepting of Yaakov and the bracha being real. but they weren't fully accepting of their role, their relationship vis-a-vis Yaakov. And that was where the error was. It wasn't a flaw. It was just the approach that Moshe had taken with the possibility of making some headway. But the reality was that we see from the Torah that Edom's response shows you that they hadn't moved forward. They hadn't moved past the conflict that Esav had had, and it still remained in their society, that they still held on to this bitterness between Esav and Yaakov, and it still permeated their psyche, their collective psyches. So we're not finished yet. So then there's one interesting point here. So if you look, go back to source number 17, or go forward, it says, "Vayomrei lo bnei Yisrael b'mesila na'alev imeimecha nishna aniu miknai v'nasati mechram rak in davar b'raglai evora." So again, Moshe tries, and he says, this is obviously the Malachim, but from Moshe, but they say, we're only going to walk in a straight path, we'll only walk on our path, and we won't even, you know, take any of our own food, we'll buy your food, and we'll end up giving you money, and we just want to pass through. And it says, "Vayomer lo savor vayite Edom likraso be'am kaved v'yad chazaka." So Edom refused, and they went out to greet the Jewish people with swords and their army. And so what happened over here? So Moshe now, he recognized, this is plan B. So Moshe recognized at this point that Edom was really still stuck in this conflict with Yaakov, Esav and Yaakov conflict. They had to move forward from the past. So now he just goes with a more practical approach. Listen, fine, let's forget about the past and just recognize that it'll benefit you on a practical level. So the next approach of Moshe is simply diplomatic. It's like any two countries getting together and trying to work out a deal. So we're working out a deal to benefit you, but forget about all the psychology and all the philosophy and the relationships we have. Just treat us like we're an outside nation. Don't treat us like we're brethren anymore. And that's why in the beginning he says, Achenu, that we're brethren. He's trying to promote the idea that Esau was accepting of the relationship, and now Edom was going to be a loving friend and brother of Klal Yisrael. And once that's seen to be not true, so now Moshe tries a more diplomatic approach, just a practical way of treat us like any other nation. Don't treat us any differently. Let us go through. We'll benefit you. You'll make a lot of profit. Your market will go up. And nevertheless, Edom says no. They said they, not only not that, but they go out. So look at Rashi. He says, so that was a reference to the bracha again, that that really when Yitzchak was unsure about Yaakov, he said that his kol was different, but his hands were like the hands of Esav, because, of course, the story was that Rivka put the fur on his hands to make him hairy like Esav. So what is this showing you? That even despite the fact that Moshe had now approached it in a diplomatic way, Edom still couldn't move beyond that relationship. They were like stuck in the past. And even when Moshe tried to avoid it, and he recognized that it wasn't going to work with that approach, he tries a different approach. He tries like a diplomatic approach. Look at us like any other nation. But the fact that Edom is so, they're so adamant that the Jews can't go through. And Rashi says, V'yad chazaka, there's a reference to the fact that they still held on to the brachos. And they still held on to the fact that Yaakov had stolen the brachos. So we see that Edom, they weren't capable of moving past that broken relationship in the past. And look in source number 19. It says, "Vayema'ein Edom nisonas Yisrael vor biglov veYisrael me'alov." So in the end, Edom, they basically didn't let the Jews go through, and Klal Yisrael had left. "Vayit Yisrael me'alov." The Ramban says, "Katzar kasub is that the Torah isn't as verbose as normal." "Kimipia gvur nitzdavu." It wasn't their choice to leave, but Hashem commanded them to leave. "Vinishmartem me'od al tisgarubam." Because there was a mitzvah for the Jews to not attack Esav. It was Usser. Kasher Pir Shalhem Moshe, Val Pia Dibur Natu Me'alav, Kilo Yachlu Asos Dover Acher, Kivan Shalom Nicham La'avor. Because they had to follow the word of God, and Hashem had said that they're not allowed to attack Esav. So this ending is fitting for this whole story, because the end shows you that Klal Yisrael, they recognized and built into our Torah, is a recognition of our relationship to Edom, that our relationship to Esav, that even though Yaakov had stolen the brachos and everything, we still respected the brotherly relationship that we have with Esau. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that it's usher for us to destroy them and to kill them. Because there's a value and there's a good in accepting our relationship to Esau, that we're really brethren and that we really share in the same forefathers, and we share in some similarities in our philosophy because we go back to Avraham. So therefore, in the end of the day, it shows you the difference between Edom and Klal Yisrael, that Edom was stuck on the relationship and the broken relationship with Yaakov, and they couldn't move past it, and they still blamed Klal Yisrael for stealing, despite the fact that they were successful. They had their own land, they had everything they wanted, they still blamed Klal Yisrael, they still held on to it. And Klal Yisrael is the opposite, that the mitzvah and the iser to take on Esav is all about moving forward, moving past the conflict. Because if anything, Yaakov should be upset at Esav too, that Esav was challenging him. Esav should have accepted the fact that he sold the Bechor. But nevertheless, the Torah commands us that we're not allowed to attack them, that we have to stay back. And that shows you the distinction between Klal Yisrael's approach and Edom's approach. That Klal Yisrael's approach is that we have to move on. We have to accept our relationship, avoid the conflict, and forget it, because it's no longer relevant. What's relevant is that we do have shared philosophy. We do have forefathers that are in common. And we should recognize that, accept that reality. So that's the difference. So that's really the end of the shiur. So before you get off, let me just summarize it, and then you can ask questions, or ask questions now if you want. Let me just summarize quickly. So the questions, or the beginning of the shiur and the end of the shiur, all take up the story of the Jewish encounter with Melech Edom and the people of Edom. Edom was the descendants of Esau, and we were trying to analyze Moshe's approach to trying to allow the Jew, to try to convince Melech Edom to let the Jews through. So interestingly enough, Rashi points out that at the very beginning, he calls Melech Edom my brother, and it's a reference to the fact that Edom was a descendant of Esau. And Rashi makes a point of showing you that really the Jewish people endured slavery when really Esau should have been included in that slavery, and Esau avoided it. So we looked at the Medrash a little bit, and we saw that there's a machlokas as to what happened. And one side holds that really Esau left Yaakov because of the Shtar Chov, that it sounds like he accepted the fact that, you know, they had this relationship and that Yaakov was the Bechor, but he had to move on because he was trying to avoid the pain of the Ashgacha, but he was accepting of it. Whereas the other side holds that he was Busha, he was embarrassed, that he was still in conflict. So Rashi's taking the approach, which is Moshe's approach. He's explaining Moshe's argument, which is that really Esav had somewhat moved on. They had accepted the fact that Yaakov was the Bechor, and they simply were trying to avoid having to pay this debt, and now they should have a karsa tov to the Jewish people for enduring it and for taking it on. But that's all under the assumption that Esav accepts this hashgacha, they accept this promise, this avtacha. And then he keeps going, he keeps talking about it. He says to Melech Edom that the avos are mitzdarim bekever. So why does he mention that? Why does Rashi mention that? Because he's pointing out to Esav that we have commonality, and that in the past, our forefathers are affected by this relationship, and if you continue, or if you make it unable for us to pass through your land, it's a defect in the legacy of our forefathers, because we're combined, we're connected to one another. And then he makes reference to the bracha once again. He says that there's hashgacha to Klal Yisrael and Kol Yaakov, and the bracha is real. And then finally, he says that you shouldn't, will benefit you, and it won't be to your detriment, it'll be to your benefit. But nevertheless, Edom's response shows you that they weren't on the same page as Moshe and the Jewish people, because Edom's response is no, that you can't go through, and even makes reference to the brachos in Rashi, the bracha of Esav. So it shows you that even though Esav was accepting of Hakol Kol Yaakov, Edom accepted the fact that that Yaakov was the Bechor and he was Yorish, but they couldn't accept the fact that it was superior, and they still assumed that their bracha was superior. So you see that they were still in conflict. They still couldn't move past it. And even when Moshe tries another approach, he tries a more diplomatic approach where he says, we're just going to benefit you. You'll profit from us. Nevertheless, Edom still continues, and he says, V'yad chazaka. There's still a reference to the fact that they're in conflict and they couldn't move forward. And then finally, we see from the very end that the Jewish response and the iser to attack Edom is in line with the fact that we're accepting, that we don't deny the past, and we don't hold grudges. There's no idea of Nekima in Klal Yisrael. But the reality is that we move on, as opposed to the Edom, which they were stuck on the past. They were stuck. They were unable to move forward. And that's why they wouldn't allow Klal Yisrael to move through. Okay, so that's the end of the shiur. Are there any questions on any points in the shiur? Anybody want to bring in any other ideas?
Rabbi Ginsburg.
Yes, yeah.
Moshe, the idea, what was Moshe hinging on that other Edom